All right, gang, welcome to People's Rights. I appreciate you all being here. First of all, we have a couple new people here today. So if you wouldn't mind, just let us know your name and how you heard about us. So we'll start over here. We'll put you on the spot. All right. So Ron's from Ventura. Okay.
I'm Peng. I'm also from Ventura County. I heard about the group through Ron.
All right.
And, basically, we fighting what everybody else is fighting.
Yeah.
All right. Glad to have you. And what's your name again?
Hi, I'm Natalie Tatch. I'm with Ron and Peng. We're from the same county. We're fighting the same county.
All right. All right. Well, welcome. Welcome to all of you.
Oh, yeah.
Glad to have you here. So, in case you didn't know, Ron is going to be our speaker today. And Ron is from a group called Feds for Medical Freedom, which has recently changed its name to Feds for Freedom. So, you'll find all the information on our video when it comes out. But I wanted to update everybody on a couple things that are going on in the world. We're going to have, at the end during the open mic period, Kaylin is here, and she's going to give us a little update about Edward Bedalian's situation. And Kaylin will be talking to us at the end. Also, as many of you may know, and some of you may not know, there is now trouble brewing in the Middle East. And this is a very dangerous situation because it could lead to a catastrophic war. And so I would just like to encourage everybody to say a prayer to try to end this somehow peacefully. It's going to be very difficult, but say your prayers tonight because the world needs it. Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit about these mandates that Ron is here to talk to us about. I just wanted to make a point. If you read the preamble to the Constitution, which I'm not going to read much of it, but basically it says that the federal government was given these rules in the Constitution to abide by so that they didn't get out of control. So they didn't think that they were in charge. So they understood that the people are in charge. Obviously, they've forgotten that. And if you think about the word mandate, who really can issue mandates? If you think about who issues mandates, the boss. So they must think they're the boss of us. They've got it backwards. They think they're the boss and we are their subjects. So that's they're trying to go back to the old monarchy system, or even further back into outright despotism, as John will tell you. So they think their attitude and their demeanor is that they're the boss. And if they can tell you what you have to do with your own body, then they're more than just a boss. Don't they become an owner of you at that point? Aren't they slave owners? If they can force you to put something in your body, don't they become slave owners at that point? So the Fourth Amendment, the very beginning line of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution says, the right of the people to be secure in their persons. houses, papers, and effects. So you have the right to be secure that your body is yours. Now, I don't want to go too far into it, but we signed a treaty, and the United States signed a treaty wherein it outlined that it is a war crime to force people to undergo medical experiments against their will. So we're signatories to that treaty. Those are things to think about. But what I'd like to do is invite Ron Severson up to the microphone to give us a little talk today about what his group is involved with, Feds for Medical Freedom. And come on up and tell us your story, Ron. Appreciate having you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to come out and meet others who are also in the same journey to continue the American independence that has continued for over two centuries before. I'm also here today with Pang and Natalie. We come from Ventura County, where we work and support our Navy. We work for Naval Sea Systems Command, which is a great entity to ready our ships, help the sailors to be fit, as well as to have their systems be fit for their mission. And then what happened 2 years ago is I and several of us started to realize maybe people high up in the Navy, high up in the government, maybe they lost sight of the main mission. You know, and if we were to say that main mission is to preserve and perpetuate freedom for mankind, I would agree. If we were to say that that mission is to preserve religious liberty, I would agree. If we were to say that mission is to preserve everyone's right to speak what they truly think, I would agree, and many have agreed. In various ways, no matter where you worked, whether you were a teacher or a firefighter, or whether you were maybe working with a company, you know, and had more than 100 employees at the time, or maybe you were someone serving within the federal government, whether it be for the Navy or the Army, or maybe it's for Social Security, or maybe it's the State Department and many other different departments and agencies, right? We were told you will take the shot or it's goodbye. And so for myself and where we've worked, I recall an email that came October 2021, from Vice Admiral Galinis at the time. And realize Vice Admiral Galinis is a top leader for our command. And he sent an email that was very clear. There was no gray area. It was very clear. He typed, folks, you will take the vaccine or you will not be working for the Navy. So that stood out in my mind because it hit me. Later on, I discovered it hit other people to read this. And I thought, wow, these people are serious. They're not joking around when I've heard a few things in the news about shots being forced on us. And in those days, I, to some extent, was agreeing that maybe the shots are good, or maybe they're good for a certain subset of people. I knew it wasn't good for me, and I knew there had to be choice. Where there's risk, there must be choice. There had to be choice. And so then I recall thinking, well, they're going to have a provision for those with natural immunity or those who can say they've had the illness prior. But then when the days and a few weeks came by, and I remember I was meeting up with Pang and Natalie and others, and I became fast friends with other people. I started to see there was no provision for natural immunity. And there was a darkness, like a sense of darkness. It was very bad. It was very wrong. This should not be happening in the United States. And I realized this is a time where we put our flag in the ground, say this is our place, this is our position, and we keep to it. We keep to it no matter what it comes to. And telling myself to be polite, telling myself there is a good optimal solution for this, we just don't see it yet. And also seeing that we were in a type of game of chicken. We're being stared down by people in higher positions. And we're also reading about this for the firefighters here in Los Angeles. Reading about it for the teachers. You're starting to hear rumblings of your neighbors. I was even working aboard ship in Seattle, Washington, working aboard ship. And I was trying to understand one day, why was the ship so quiet on a work day, work hours? And then I realized a couple men were having a serious discussion. Something had grabbed their mind, their emotion, to where they had to have a serious discussion and not do the pipe fitting, not do the cable pulling to install systems on the ship. And so I carefully approached and listened and realized they were faced with either taking a shot they did not agree with or taking their whole family and moving somewhere else. And they were talking about their coworkers who had just uprooted. Some went to Idaho, some went to Montana, is what I remember them saying. One man was incredibly conflicted. I talked with him a bit more, and it turned out that his wife was pushing on him to take these shots. So here he was at work. Work is pushing on him to take shots. He would go home. His wife is pushing on him to take shots. He knew it was not for him. He did not want his kids to take it. And yet, what was he supposed to really point to help him out? What was he supposed to point to support his position? And it's interesting. It's interesting how some of us so firmly said no, but we have that right. We have that right because this involves our bodies. You know, there's a boundary for every one of us here that your body is yours, made by God in His image. And I remember leaving that day and starting to realize this problem was welling up and we needed some kind of resistance, some kind of solution, a best way forward. Again, when I was back in California and met other folks that already had formed a resistance, learned there was a name. There was a name for the group that was forming among those I had worked around. And the name was Feds for Medical Freedom. And I got to meet other good people through the association there. And then learned that folks on the East Coast who had started this group, Marcus Thornton, Megan Guerrero, and others, they had already gathered, you know, information and already were looking to set forth a lawsuit to go against the executive order for us to take the shots. The executive order that we were placed under as federal employees was Executive Order 14043. And there was another one, 14042, that was for those who are contract employees. Essentially, the executive orders were much the same. It was just defined whether you're working exactly as an employee of the federal government or contract support. And then attention went towards lawsuits. It's an ugly thing to think, wow, here we are faced with participating in a lawsuit. It's concerning to wonder, what will this cost? How much time will go by? So people pulled together, and it was great to see people pulling together. it carried me through that dark time. Because, yeah, things were dark all the way into January of 22. Very dark, I would say. Very unsettling. People were looking to find other work. People were looking to become entrepreneurs. A lot of questions at that time. Though just before Christmas, a case was filed in federal court. And then come January, a month later, because there was a request by the lawyers to have a emergency temporary injunction. And I believe it was January 21st of 2022, where Judge Brown did provide relief. In fact, he provided very broad and wide relief, not just for those with Feds for Medical Freedom, not just those who were a part of the lawsuit, but in fact, for the entire federal workforce under Executive Order 14043. And I believe it was a week or two prior to that, there was another case that better fit pushing back against the other executive order for the contract support. So that was the tumultuous start, the difficult start. And since then, Feds for Medical Freedom has continued to work within the federal government to inform people of their rights and to work throughout public and also to work with other organizations who are standing up for rights. The case, to my knowledge, I'm not very close to what's happening with the case, though what has happened is the temporary injunction was unlocking the door to buy us time. Then DOJ, the federal government, did not like this. And then there was a 3-judge en banc panel who reviewed the case primarily on the jurisdiction. And of those three, two of them found, so a majority, two out of three, found that they did not agree with our position. And so then it looked very bad for us. And then our side appealed. Then it went to, well, there was a request. First, I should say that there was a request for the full en banc, which is a panel of 17 federal judges in the Fifth Circuit. And that was accepted. And I remember we were told something like 1% of cases get accepted for a full en banc when requested. Thankfully, this was accepted. I remember traveling east all the way to New Orleans just over a year ago. So that was September of 2022. Got to sit in the courtroom. A courtroom that looked like a castle. Big blue curtains, awesome carved wood ceilings, and the bench where the judges sit was this curvaceous U-shape so that all 17 of them could sit together. Now, I got to say, it was around 9 a.m. in the morning, and a few of the judges, I think, were still nodding off to sleep, which to me actually helped to calm me down to show this is routine for them. It's interesting how something that could be so transformative for many of us was another day for the judges. Though there were those judges that were wide awake and alert, and the questions they asked were things like, and they're asking this to the attorney for the DOJ, things like, if you could do this, could you not mandate a particular diet for the federal workforce? And then hearing the attorney for the DOJ try to explain that away. And he did a poor job of it. And as it went, every time the DOJ attorney had to provide an answer, his answer was weak. It was limited. It was poor. And that was good for us. Well, many months went by. I believe it was March or April of this year when the ruling of those 17 judges was provided. And of the 17, 10 of them, a majority, agreed with us. They sided with us. And that's very strong, thankfully. What's happened more recently now is the DOJ has appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that is where the case sits now. They've asked the U.S. Supreme Court to hear the case, and really what they're hearing on is just the jurisdiction, whether it's even acceptable to have a case. It is not yet on the merits of what occurred. But the justice system is very drawn out. It's very slow motion. And so we have to be patient. We have to realize we're in a type of marathon, perhaps even longer than a marathon, though it is in process. And we are winning. We are winning. Everyone actually is winning, and we continue to win by coming together as people have here today. And we continue to win by talking about this with our family and our neighbors when we can, when appropriate. And talk about it in an uplifting way, in a positive way. The positive way that the American spirit to maintain freedom is continuing. There is a push. There is a pressure. There is a pressure back. And though at times it's a tough topic, we find ways to talk about it so that we can paint this in a beautiful manner. So that we can, hopefully when we're older, look back at this time and see it as a tough time that we rose through and continued. And continued for the future, for the children. That's something that motivates many of us. How are kids to defend against this? How are those who are not yet born, how are they to defend against this? When you lose freedom, there is no easy way to just climb back up. That's why we have to continue to push and to hold on to what we have. We have to try to define who it is that's after our freedoms, why it is. And we need to resist where appropriate and how best we can. And that's resist with our time, our communication, our knowledge, our dollars. We have to realize that outlets, whether it be utilizing the legal system or coming to assemble, this is where we can blow off some pressure and we can logically prepare ourselves to take aim for our next steps. Ways that are legal, ways that are right. And that's what I want to continue to be a part of, to continue to push back against the regime, against those who are in powers of government, powers of banking, and otherwise, whether it be giant companies that perhaps don't have our best interest, perhaps areas of the medical industry that do not have our best interest. We have to somehow help everyone to realize what it is to be human. We can't forget that. And to be human involves preserving our choice, our bodily autonomy. The organization Feds for Medical Freedom, and now Feds for Freedom as the new name, I see as the best way forward for those who are with the federal government to network and to continue to push back and maintain our rights. Thank you.
So, Ron, if you would, are you willing to stick around and answer a few questions from our
Absolutely.
Illustrious people here at People's Rights?
Absolutely.
Okay, so anybody that does have a question, please line up and ask it. And I will start off with if you could just respond to the fact that BlackRock, as it turns out, owns much of the media that is pushing the vaccines and the mandates, I shouldn't have even called it a vaccine. They're pushing the injections.
Yeah, the shots.
Because they own the very media outlets that are pushing it, and they also own Pfizer and Moderna, for example. So I was wondering if you could just speak to that, how that such a giant corporation can have so much influence.
I think in part it's a consequence of investing is good. Investing ownership of companies, that's good. The capitalist system, though there has been such growth, whereas most of the middle class and the poor class has had limited opportunities for income to invest with, that it continues to be more and more imbalanced. And if you look back in, you know, through the United States history back about 50 years ago, wealth inequality was much less than it is now. Now there's great wealth inequality. This is a difficult problem to understand how to solve or how to begin to solve. A problem that's 50 years in the making, one might imagine, might take 50 years to solve. Maybe faster, maybe 20 years. Though, as you say, not only do they own companies that are producing medicines, they also own the companies that are providing the information, the media. We have to turn to media sources that are free, that is, that are not owned by other entities. Twitter recently, right? Twitter in the last year was purchased by Elon, and his purpose is to make it more and more a free speech platform. It seems he's detecting the problem that you're bringing up. For that reason, I see Twitter as a good platform, at least for now. Things can change. And assembling here in person is probably the very best way. This cannot be censored. If you know a time and a location, this is where you can exchange information. There are other things to do besides just communicating and exchanging information. Look for those businesses that are doing well. Look for those banks that are doing well. A public square, yes, thank you. There are other companies that have recently formed. In fact, we met the founder of Public Square at a rally in Port Hueneme in November of 21. Yes. Awesome. Awesome.
Yes.
Some of us have too. Ventura County. Yeah. And Public Square, led by Michael Seifert, he's looking to eventually make an Amazon that is for those businesses and those customers, those businesses who respect freedom and respect American values. And so we should look for those and we should do business with those.
Right.
Ron, so, I wanted to say something too. There's also a
come on up to the mic. Come on up.
I just have a comment. I mean,
yeah, there's also a conflict of interest because, you know, certain people in government positions also own shares in some of these health companies, like a certain Secretary of Defense, who shouldn't be, you know, how can we trust certain officials like that when they have, yeah, something to gain from their decision of power, you know? That's something the American people need to be aware of, too. You know, you got people in Congress, too, that are pretty much immune for insider trading, right? That was just a comment.
Yeah, yeah. What? Having people in official positions that have an interest to benefit perhaps by tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands or more based on decisions they're making, and if those decisions involve restricting our rights, this is very concerning. And you would probably think there should be committees within Congress to evaluate this.
You know, to carry on with what he was pointing out, I don't know if people are aware of this, but there's a company called Vanguard, which is bested only by BlackRock in size. And one of Vanguard's chief investments is prisons for profit. So if you have judges and attorneys, that have Vanguard funds, they are literally profiting from imprisoning people. So the conflict of interest is huge. I was wondering if you could comment on that.
That area I'm not too familiar with. Though just touching on the concept that again, you could have people in power profiting off a privatized section of the justice system, that is concerning. You have to look at it and realize they probably have an interest to continue to grow the prison system rather than to reduce crime. They may have an incentive to release people and bring them back in again. I have not looked at this carefully enough, though, but you can start to pick apart a chain of incentives. You could do this in almost any area. And there is a reason why some things are best run by the public for the public versus being privatized, especially in an area of justice. Justice historically has been well run by government. For the public good as a public service. Probably, I think it would be interesting to look at how budgets have changed within states over the decades and how slowly over time things have become more privatized in some areas. And then it creates a bit of a stickiness against reform or against actually running the system for the best interest of the public. It becomes for the best interest of the owners of that company.
I had a question, changing topics. Where are you at now with the Fed for Freedom? Do you have to get shots? Are you working? Where are you at with that?
I am still working. Most of us are still working. I do want to speak, though, to those who did lose their position. There are some who at this point are now prior federal service, because the federal government being essentially a hodgepodge of many agencies and departments, and with the rapidity of how fast things evolved right after the issuance of the executive order from the Biden administration, there was a patchwork of individual policies. And I believe even within Department of the Navy, there were differences among individual commands. So, yes, some people did lose their position. Some people were so fed up, they left. There were those who were near retirement, and they said, time to retire now. So there has been a big impact. Yes. Yeah, accountability issue. Yes.
So the question is, can you speak to the accountability issue?
Yeah, to this day, no one has been held accountable. Certainly no one at a high level. No one at lower levels. It's aggravating. It appears that we will have to look for accountability up at higher levels, where you got to focus the attention. Senator Rand Paul, he's been an excellent advocate for people thinking as we do. He's putting the focus and heat on Fauci, and he's keeping that up. I think this is very good. Some of us would like to see a few others perhaps have some focus put on them in due time. And we would definitely like to have policy going forward to protect medical freedom. Protect your choice when it comes to any kind of a medication or medical procedure related to vaccines or purported vaccines. Especially, we got to remember, these vaccines have been emergency use authorization products. Not only that, but they also have a makeup that has never been provided to the public at large before, these mRNA. So the questions that people have had are very legitimate. And there's evidence out there to show people having blood clots, to show them having strokes. Myocarditis is a word you hear. You see that in the news. That's heart damage. That's heart damage. And this is happening in children. I've read where some doctors have reported that while you can recover from this, other people are thought to have lifelong scarring of the heart. I mean, that opens a tremendous concern right there.
Which brings me to my next question is, like, how are you guys, like, are you filing lawsuits? Because, I mean, have you guys been hearing about a lot of people who died from getting the shot, like, you know, within days of having it, you know? And are you guys filing lawsuits, you know, countering that with the federal government?
There are various lawsuits, though within the organization. There are several, but the one that has the most success is filed by Boyd & Gray & Associates, mm-hmm. and that's the one that's taking the Executive Order 14043 head-on into the federal court system. And at this point, the Department of Justice, representing the Biden administration, have now appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. And what the DOJ wants to do is they want to wipe the record.
Right.
So the success to resist, they want to knock that clean like it never happened. And we could use our imagination. Do they want to provide another executive order sometime soon? Or do they want to lay the groundwork so that in another 4 years, they're going to do something like this again?
Because technically, I mean, like, I was faced with that with one job, too. And I told my employer, well, are you going to be responsible if I die? Are you going to be responsible? Because you're the one that pressured me into doing this. And luckily, I left that job. You know, I didn't get to that point. But, you know, I feel for a lot of people that have been pressured with that. Because that's just tyrannical, you know. There's a lot of case studies of people have been sick, dying left and right, and it's like, are you responsible for that? Because you're pushing me to do that, you know.
And they should be.
It's insane. They should be held liable for that.
When it's at work by an employer, mm-hmm. you're saying no, thank you,
yep.
and they're saying yes, you will.
Yeah.
And they're holding your paycheck mm-hmm. as the thing they're dangling before you.
Yep.
There's a word for this: coercion. Mm-hmm. It is felony coercion to dangle your job before you or to dangle the prospect of firing you based upon a medical decision. Mm-hmm. COVID penalty run by Brian Ward. Mm-hmm. On Twitter, he is God's Riddles. He's an excellent resource of information on this specific topic. He is filing several lawsuits, I believe almost weekly right now, mm-hmm. in various states on the exact topic right there. The employer had forced people to take it.
Yep.
It's a deep violation of rights in several respects.
Yeah.
In fact, again, because this is EUA, emergency use authorization, it actually falls into another subset of law and regulation, which is stricter. Based on what I've read from him, in the past, Congress provided authority to the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Mm-hmm. So somehow in the past, Congress provided tremendous power to one person. It's concerning as to how and why that was allowed to occur in the past, and we could probably say that's something that should change in the future. Congress should probably
especially
undo
with Pfizer. Especially with Pfizer.
Yes. Yes.
I said, my name is Ira. So when you're talking about EUA, this isn't really the question I'm going to ask, but there's no more emergency. So how can you have an EUA if there's no more emergency? So are you guys civilian employees of the government?
Yes, civilian. We are civilian employees.
So besides the large, the Black Rocks and Vanguards, you also have unions. Maybe you guys don't have a union, but when it comes to the Vanguards and the Black Rocks, there are unions that are also exerting a lot of power. So has it been dangled in front of you yet? Like, you guys have TSPs, the Thrift Savings Plan?
Yes.
So has it been dangled in front of you yet that here's the TSP? Well, if you're good people, we're going to do Vanguard, BlackRock, whomever, and you guys are going to get great returns on your TSPs. Talk about coercion or what have you.
The way I understand TSP is you choose a fund and, you know, a portion of your paycheck gets provided into that. There is what's called, I believe, TSP window or open window. I would have to look again at this, but there is some process by which you can be more selective in how that area of retirement savings and investments is invested. Though that is not pushed. What is pushed is more the cookie cutter, you know, put your money in the C fund or the I fund, so forth. What C fund generally is matching the S&P 500. And then, yes, then the actual way to invest that is by other large banking investment institutions, which perhaps don't have our best interest. Yeah.
Can you tell us how federal employees and federal contractors can get a hold of you, how they can find your information and your contact details?
The best way to find more information on Feds for Medical Freedom and now Feds for Freedom would be the website. That's fedsforfreedom.org. There's also numerous locations, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Truth, Gitter, Gab. You can also find emails there on the website, fedsforfreedom.org. I remember early on where Pang and Natalie and I and others would go to Google and go to the other search engines trying to help rank the website up higher. Okay, now use a different phone. Okay, now use a different browser. Right? Okay, you know, then another day you do it again somewhere else. These are good techniques. You know, you put in a search word, and then you look for your website and make that the first one you hit. You help to teach the search engine this is what to display higher. Then obviously those who were putting together the website did a great job. And what we see nowadays is that it should come up in the top 10, fedsforfreedom.org. You'll see our founder and president is Marcus Thornton. He's been very active. And there's many others that have done tremendous volunteerism to run the organization. You know, we're talking late nights, early mornings, lunch hour, nooks and crannies of time. There are spouses who are helping. There are some people that are losing sleep. They're helping so much. They're mission-focused people, right? We are mission-focused people. We have to win. We are winning. And we're going to keep winning. We must, right? The future counts on it, at the risk of sounding cliche. And we have to do this in a legal and a somewhat of a polite way, but you stand up for yourself utilizing the tools available. That's the legal system. And that right there is a big challenge, because you have to pay for it. You have to find people who are willing to write how they have been impacted. And early on, a lot of people did not want to talk about this. This was so painful, right, and concerning. People thought that if they stood up and spoke out against it, that they would be fired for that reason. So it was a bit of a catch-22. That's part of the ugliness of discrimination. Now the government thinks we're complaining about shots, and then they like to say, well, there's nothing written down to protect your right to say yes or no to a shot. And then the way we counter that is we say, I'm saying no thank you based on my religious belief, and that's what it is. Perhaps other people have other reasons why they've said no thank you. But religious belief is protected. It is constitutionally protected. And we are exercising those rights to maintain these rights.
I don't want to take a lot of your time, but the city of Los Angeles, you know, there's various different, my husband works for LA Airport, some work for the Department of Water and Power, there's LAUSD also, and they're all paralleling kind of what you're saying. So the mandates for this vaccine, which is under EUA, as you say, but is various different ways, like you say, different patches. My husband decided he was going to, he faced the coercion by taking the vaccine. It's very, you know, heart-wrenching that he did that, even though we had both religious and medical exemptions. And there's some that have quit, like our friend Eileen, who was LAUSD, she quit. And now LAUSD, I think, took back their mandate, and they're going back to work. But the problem is, what about these people who lost money for like a year and a half or whatever? They're going to get back to work, but what? Same as any other employee? They're not going to get on back pay? So I guess my question really is this. Can your organization, which is federal, is there something we could use for that in terms of our local areas?
I really like this question. I really like it because I've heard other people say similar concerns. Our hope is that our case, along with the other cases, as there's more success, provides legal precedent that other cases can point to and reference. And that then makes it easier for the attorneys representing these people who have lost their pay, lost their position, to see the pathway to present this before a judge and to then get the income back, the compensation they are due. Because, yes, everyone who's lost their position, lost pay, or, gosh, had, you know, you're just nerve-wracked over it, compensation is due. It's due for everyone. You could then argue compensation is due for the spouses. You could argue compensation is due for the children. Right? The turmoil that I could imagine that's happened in some families, especially then being faced with having to uproot and relocate and then go find another job in a brand new town, possibly where there's no one there you know. It's really a wild, interesting time. But people have been heavily impacted, though most who took the shot and who thought nothing of it, they don't see this. And it's important that we continue to share the story of what's happened and happening so that we can alert, inform, and awaken others who have not seen it. They've either not seen it because it's been pushed out of their view on purpose, or they've not seen it because they always look away. I've seen both happening. I think what will happen, it's just a guess, right? But right now we have the 118th Congress, U.S. Congress. This Congress has a subcommittee on the weaponization of government led by Jim Jordan, right? And there's others. So there is a large effort underway, in fact, in Congress, to come to grips with what has occurred, to acquire the facts, to digest this, and to provide a report to Congress January of 2025. That will then be the start of the next Congress, 119th Congress. Perhaps the 119th Congress will be able to see wrongs have occurred, and then they can perhaps lay forth something to help you and all those you know and all those we all here have known. There should be help for LA Unified School teachers and other teachers out here in Pasadena. There should be help for LA City firemen. There should be help for all the nurses and the doctors, whether they be in California or even elsewhere in the country, and on, all of those people are part of businesses that were more than 100 employees. Rather arbitrary number. As long as we don't give up, as long as we keep talking about it, find a way to enjoy this. Find a way to find happiness in life again yet maintain the fight, maintain the pressure, maintain the resistance, and put a waypoint out there of January 2025 to see that maybe there's going to be a big change. If there's not a big change in process at that point, perhaps that's where we realize we've escaped, but perhaps there won't be any apology or compensation. We will have to work for it, though.
Thanks very much for coming for so far. My question is, how was the federal government and the military in terms of religious exemptions?
Ooh. I think religious exemptions, we as employees in the federal government were asked to fill out religious exemptions, I believe as early as right near Halloween, end of October 2021, and then a lot happened early in November that year. A whole lot happened. In fact, I recall the term religious exemption was used. Then it became a religious exception. There are different definitions between the word exemption and exception. Exception is not nearly as strong as the word exemption. All right? So you want to use the word exemption. I did fill one out. A lot of others filled one out. Really kind of strange to be at work and to be filling out a form where, you know, you provide your basic information, fill in the paragraph. And there was the implication that you were to write something about your faith, something about your religious belief that blocked us or blocked myself from taking the shots. I wrote something to the effect that my DNA is designed by God is good as it is. It need not any help by man's medicine. Certainly not with me being healthy already. Very concerning, because then these were also aggregated into various databases. And really, it was apparent what was occurring. It's a purge of the federal workforce. It's a way of identifying, applying pressure and saying, you're different, put your dunce hat on and sit in the corner. I think a lot of us were thinking back to 1930s, 1940s in Europe. It's like, this is how that probably started. Yeah.
I'm wondering if you have heard of the term mass formation. You just alluded to it by referring back to World War II era Germany. So do you think that's what's happened to us? We've undergone that sort of mass formation, or at least a lot of us have.
Whether by intention of those in positions of high leadership, or whether it occurred as a natural consequence, I'm not quite sure, but I would say yes, a mass formation, hypnotism or psychosis has occurred. The idea that everyone would have to take it. You'd have to take it to protect your mother. You'd have to take it to protect those at your house. You'd have to take it so that you yourself would survive. Even though at that point we'd all lived a full year with the virus around, I was certain I had already had it, and I recovered. Though it was bad for me. I should be clear on that. It was very bad for me. I had it, I believe, December 2019. Though I kept my physical fitness up. I recall I was working in San Diego, and the mask, the idea to wear something, seemed to be a type of reinforcement, a type of ritual of sorts. A blankie. I'm going to put this on and I'm going to be safe. And then at the same time, they spooked everybody by staying home, by what they put on the news. I remember the Christmas music on the radio as I drove around in April. It's like, this is strange. But I tried to just stay busy in what I needed to do, and I'm sure most of us here did as well. But yeah, did people in a higher power really have a full plan to do what they did? There must have been some who did. Here's something interesting. Many years ago, I attended Fresno State, and I would read in the Henry Madden Library, the big building library on campus, Central California. And in about the year 2000 and 2001, I was concerned what could be done by those who want to harm our countrymen, our nation. I'd even happened to take a class on the Vietnam War and modern warfare that was taught by a colonel in the Air Force. Very small class. But in a nutshell, I remember he said, well, the knowledge of that time was there are people out there that want to bring harm to Americans, but we can't do much about it until they do. Well, when there was harm that came upon us, and there was the concern about the anthrax and the envelopes, I believe sent to Senator Daschle, I remember some of that. Anyways, I went to the library and perused books. Some of them were biological agents, books written in the 70s and the 80s. And the point I want to make, there was a paragraph I read in one of these books that the purpose of biological warfare is to disrupt and to cause great damage to economies. And this book that was written either in the 70s or 80s used the word trillions, damage to the trillions of dollars. And that you'd use this in concert with other means of warfare, psychological warfare, and other means. Right? So there's books out there written from decades ago that effectively have somewhat of an outline of what we've just lived through. So certainly those in positions to maintain our security, some of them must have had some awareness, and whether they dusted off a playbook or they had a playbook all ready to go, I don't know. But it really looks like they chose the wrong playbook, unless they wanted to cause deeper harm. Because that's all I see that's happened was deeper harm.
Right. I'm wondering if you're aware that a statistical study has been done looking at VAERS and the European Vaccine Adverse Event Database, also the Israeli database, and extrapolating from those data sets, they are estimating that over 25 million people worldwide are already dead from the vaccines, with upwards of a billion people seriously injured. So in my view, and this is based on a lot of research, I think this was a depopulation agenda. And as a result, I've lost faith completely in the medical industry, and I'm rapidly losing any faith whatsoever in the judicial system. But I was wondering if you were aware of that and if you could speak to that.
There have been rumors to that effect years prior to this event occurring. I don't know. I do not know. There are people with great influence. That's something to be aware of. You know, when you're speaking of large investment firms, if a large investment firm owns a very large, say, a double-digit percentage of a big business, they get to help choose who's on the board of that big business. They get to help choose what's going to occur in that big business. Again, it's like look at the incentive chain and then you got to ask yourself, are the people out there that could be evil enough to bring harm on many people. And let's just look at history. Let history show us whether there are people that exist that want to bring harm on millions throughout the world.
How did you sign your contract when you went to work there? Did you just sign your name?
I was provided an offer as a result of meeting gentlemen at a career fair.
When you're hired, you sign a contract, don't you? Took an oath. Okay.
We do take an oath.
As a civil, yes. As working for the
civil
government.
Servant.
Correct.
Yes.
But you did have to sign some paperwork.
Yes.
How did you sign that?
How did I sign that?
How did you sign your name?
I signed as myself.
What does that mean?
I signed my signature, and there was email and...
It was electronic signature?
There might have been an electronic signature at that time. For me, this goes back 15 years at that point.
Well, it would be safe to say you just signed your first name, your middle initial, last name,
yes.
And that was it, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Would you agree that there are only two statuses available to a human being? You are either free or you're a slave. Is there any wiggle room between those two concepts?
You're working for somebody. I'll say that. You're working...
It's a yes or no question. You're either free or you're a slave.
That might be a yes.
There's no wiggle room between those two. You're one or the other.
I'll say this. Definitely when I'm working to support the mission of Department of the Navy, get the ships ready.
Well, this question is a little bit bigger than that. Regardless of whatever you do with your life, you are either a free person or you're a slave person. Have you not been conditioned to believe that you're free?
We are free so long as we continue to recognize we are free.
Well, I'm going to disabuse you of that view in a little bit. What?
I said I was a free spirit until I was born.
Well, if I'm retired military, I'm also certified as a financial planner. I'm very much involved in all of this stuff and quit doing my practice in 2007 simply because I realized that the economy was phony and I could not tell anybody to put money in dollars. But I've been researching this whole thing about status since I was a little boy, by the time Sputnik was floating around up there. My dad worked at Bendix as an engineer. And, Bendix does all kinds of things with space and stuff like that. Anyway, the Masons were really after him to join, which they deny that they don't recruit anybody, but they work really hard. And he would not join the Masons, and he lost his job. So... from that point on, he began telling me about the New World Order and the whole coming of this whole process that's undergoing, that the change is coming at some point, and that's what this is all, what he was facing and was dealing with. So I had been looking for a long time, and I said, where is this New World Order? It can't be us. We're the good guys. Then I went to Vietnam. My commander was John Abrams, the son of the theater commander, General Abrams. And that's when I learned that we are the New World Order. So there's a whole series that's been a plan that has been put in place over 150 years ago. And they began to accelerate it when they set up the 14th Amendment. So let me ask you another question. Are you a citizen of the United States?
Yes.
Or the United States of America?
Well, I recognize myself as a citizen of the United States of America.
Wait a minute. Those are two different countries. One's free, one's slave. Which one are you?
I'm the free one. Yeah.
Not if you're saying that you're a citizen of the United States. I'm going to prove that to you in just a minute. You literally have a choice of status, and this is what the concept of jurisdiction is all about. But the system you're in, you're working under their system, and it's, and they make you think that you have access to the free side when you have actually volunteered out of that status, not knowing it because you've been tricked and cheated. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a couple court cases here.
John, this is a Q&A situation. Why don't you pursue this later in private?
Because I want it on here. Because of every conversation, every question.
The speaker is Ron, I'm not
asking,
you.
I'm asking him questions.
I know, but the speaker is Ron.
I'm asking him questions.
But this is something. Okay, John is going to pursue this in a couple of weeks.
I'm getting there. Will you let me get there?
It's very interesting. I have heard some of this before, though.
I'm just going to read a couple court cases and see if you've heard of them before.
Okay.
And then I'll go a little bit further what we're doing about
it.
All right, so these court cases are kind of important because I want to know if you've heard of this case, State v. Manuel, because you're quoting court cases and other things that you're involved in right now, so court cases are important. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Okay. True.
This says, the term citizen in the United States means United States citizen or legal fiction, analogous to the term subject under common law. We're supposed to be under common law, right?
Common law.
Okay. Yeah. The change of phrase has resulted from the change in government. Have you ever heard of that before?
I don't believe I have.
Okay. There's another court case, a Supreme Court case, Jones v. Temer. The Privilege and Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment protects very few rights because it neither incorporates the Bill of Rights nor protects all rights of individual citizens. Instead, this provision only protects those rights peculiar to being a citizen of the federal government, does not protect those rights which relate to state citizenship. So it should come as no shock to you that they're all using what they call emergency use authorizations. Isn't that what you say that they're operating under?
Correct.
Well, under the status of citizen of the United States, you have a status that's under the use of emergency provisions. Why? Because it suspends the Bill of Rights. Supreme Court versus Valentine, this is another one. This is only one sentence. It says, the only absolute and unqualified right of a citizen of the United States to residence within the territorial boundaries of the state. There's more here that say that you don't have any access, but if you're interested in learning more about this, I'm going to be doing a short version of my class on October 29th, and we're going to go through this stuff. It's an eight-hour class, which I would abbreviate for you. In the meantime, if you want more information, I can give you more information. Easy to do that if you'll just leave me your contact information.
I'll do that. Okay. I'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing about how that our bodies is the property of God, and that you shared about that first and foremost that God is our Creator, and that prior and above every authority, God is above it all. Can you elaborate on that and your spiritual your faith journey through the last few years, especially during the mandates, and how it may apply or not apply to your religious exemption?
Awesome question to ask. Yeah, in some ways, being on a faith journey, this time that's tested all of us, it's a way of testing our faith. And, you can read of times when Jesus was tested, but he did not give in. I did not want to give in. Even if I thought the shots were benign, I still did not want to give in, because as soon as it became an issue of, you will take this, I knew right then, no, thank you. Yeah, something's wrong. Something's wrong, and ask God for guidance. Ask God for inner strength. But yeah, I was angry at times. It's okay to be angry at times. Just bring it back together again, and trust that God puts us sometimes in tough situations. Tough situations will happen in life, though there is a way to climb up and out of it. There's a time to get through it. It teaches me that the tough times are not simply something that's historical behind us. Tough times will occur in our lives. Tough times will occur in the future. This is a part of our human condition, and actually it's something that God wants us to go through. He wants us to learn something. He wants us to display something. Right? God wants to be among those who follow him, but he also wants to be among those who can follow him even when they're pushed another way. He wants those who are strong and serious and who are trying. That's what a lot of this is about. It's like, just try to do better. Try to maintain your faith. And every day you do it, you've succeeded. You've won. Try to use the mechanisms within our society to win. We've used the legal system. The legal system helped us. And that's helped me to like our legal system. It's helped me to like our country. Even though there are negative things happening, I'm like, well, here are good things happening. My faith, to know that I have to keep going through tough times, that part is definitely stronger now. Definitely stronger.
Yeah. Well, Ron, I just wanted to thank you once again for coming, and we really appreciate you talking to us today. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate the invite. Appreciate knowing that people are assembling. Appreciate knowing that people are reaching out to connect with others. And this is a good thing to perpetuate. Keep going.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.